Happy Friday, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, reporting to you from our usual location deep behind the orange curtain. And yes, I apologize for last week. It didn't happen. There was not a show. If you were pressing refresh on your iTunes podcast app and did not have a new episode of Sam Nation materialize as expected, look, if you follow us on Twitter, you would have gotten a friendly note from producer Robbie, and he would have let you know that there was not a show. So anyway, I apologize for that. I was traveling and then just could not, we could not get all of our schedules here aligned to do a makeup show over the weekend. So I do not like to do that, but from time to time this happens. Big news today that is both sad and also delightfully non-political. Grumpy Cat has passed away. Do you know who I am referring to? This is the very forlorn, sad-looking kitty that has taken the internet by storm. A lot of memes have been made with this cat. The cat looks unamused, permanently unamused. So I guess I didn't know this. The cat is from Arizona, from a town, Morristown, Arizona. Belongs to a lady named Tabitha, which sounds like a cat lady to me. I mean, if your name's Tabitha, you probably have cats. But this cat owner got very lucky. At the time that she got Grumpy Cat, you know what? She was a waitress. That's right. She was a waitress and barely being able to kind of keep paying her bills. And as soon as the first picture of Grumpy Cat started to hit the internet, went viral, money began to roll in. She quit her job and eventually became quite wealthy. Daily Mail today estimates that this lady, Tabitha, made over $100 million off Grumpy Cat. I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I need... can you believe that? I get... This power of the internet, whatever it is. But it does put into perspective claims that Kylie Jenner of the infamous Kardashian clan has amassed... Well, how old is she, by the way? It's 20? 1? 2? 5? Something like that. Anyway, but that she's a billionaire. We heard that last year, that she was had made a 21. Oh my gosh. Anyway, Grumpy Cat was only 7. So RIP Grumpy Cat. And on a business note, this lady will continue to make a ton of money off of this. Because if she took anywhere near the amount of photos that I take of my dogs, I guarantee you she's got millions of them. So the Grumpy Cat will live eternally. And I assume it's a trademark name and everything. So it's become a brand and no longer, I think, completely reliant on celebrity appearances. Okay. Lots of big news this week. I think one of my favorite stories, and I'll get to the trade issue. I will get to all of that. Yes, I know that. And because we skipped last week, I have an accumulation of items to discuss with you today. So buckle up. Here we go. But I want to first get into this excitement that I'm beginning to feel tingle through my body. it's starting to get bad with the whole Comey, Brennan and Clapper trifecta. Who are these clowns? Let me first set this up for you so you understand. At the end, in the closing months of the Obama administration, there's a trifecta of investigative persons or heads of departments, respectively, that, we suspect, or we believe at least, set out to target Trump. We don't know if directions to do it came from Obama himself, but the three people were James Comey, who you know was the head of the FBI. Then there was the director of national intelligence, a man by the name of Clapper. And he kind of looks, you'll know, he kind of looks like a snapping turtle. So it goes with the name. So James Clapper. And then Mr. Bolshevik himself, John Brennan, the head of the CIA. And Brennan, by the way, I mean, you would think he was he had gone to the same Socialist Party group meetings that Bernie Sanders attended in his youth. Brennan did. He's a noted socialist, a vowed communist. So just a little bit of background. All three of these fine gentlemen, no big Trump fans. Now, all the hubbub is this week is related to a FISA application for a warrant to spy on, and I'm using that word very specifically, spy, to track electronically, to follow in person, to plant listening devices, to capture all emails, web traffic, etc. It's a very broad warrant. It's over 400 pages, targeting a man named Carter Page. Nobody would give zero anythings about who Carter Page was if it wasn't for this FISA warrant. He was a nobody. He's just a guy who was kind of loosely affiliated with the campaign, low-level guy. All political campaigns attract people like Carter Page. They are relevant for a hot 10 minutes. They come in. They're enthusiastic about the president. And Carter Page, being in some sort of investment business, I think he's had some banking ties, was traveling to the Ukraine and traveling to Europe. And maybe even Russia. I don't exactly remember. But nonetheless, this warrant application, this 400 odd page warrant, was submitted to the ultra secret FISA court and was signed off by none other than Jim Comey himself. Comey signed the warrant. Now, I don't like to rely on summaries of these things. So I actually went through the warrant. Now, it's fair, I would say, most of the warrant that I have is redacted because I'm relying only on what's publicly available. But this thing is a joke. And I know you've heard about this in various ways, but I'll tell you why it's a joke. It's a joke because it wholly relies on information provided by a man named Christopher Steele, who was hired by Fusion GPS, who was hired by the Hillary Clinton campaign, and none of that is put into this warrant. Now, you may be doubting me right now. You may say, well, why does that even matter? If it's good info, it's good info. The problem is it's not good info. It's not good info because Mueller, 2 years and unlimited millions of dollars, tracked all this down and said as much in the Mueller report. So now all eyes go back to this original FISA application where they're citing this Christopher Steele report, although they don't use his name. And maybe they do, though it's blocked out. I can't say that definitively. But they refer to this dossier, which is also referred to as the Golden Showers dossier, which could have been, I think, an enormous tip off to anybody with half a brain. I remember when the news first came out about this in the fall of 2016, I said, there's no way. Do you remember, by the way, what this Golden Showers thing was? Was a family program. Well, I want to be circumspect about this. But the allegation in the report made was that Trump had paid a group of ladies of the night, paid companions, to urinate on a bed located in a hotel suite in a hotel in Moscow that had once been slept in by President Barack Obama. Now, I've said this again and again and again. Anybody that knows Trump, the guy is a germaphobe. Folks, this guy doesn't even like shaking hands with people. The idea of him having some diseased prostitutes peeing on a bed in front of him, just, well, I know, okay, what you're saying, okay, urine is clean. I don't think Trump looks at it that way. Sterile? No. Yeah, no. This was absurd from the get-go. And the only reason Steele put this dossier together, guy paid $160,000 by Fusion to put it, to acquire they call it opposition research, but basically negative info on Trump. Well, what do you do when somebody pays you 160 grand to do X? You do X. Yes, exactly. You don't do Y. You don't do X minus 2. You do X, whatever X is. And here the job was to find stuff on Trump. And anyway, all of it was it was absurd. So I read through this FISA warrant. And just wait, this is where it gets good. The FISA warrant talks about, in the first 10 pages or so, about the source. And they identify him as a Western foreign intelligence official. Which he, by the way, was, I think, affiliated with what the British intelligence services, this Christopher Steele guy. So then what happened after this is they lay out what he's saying in the dossier. And then as corroboration in the same FISA warrant, they start citing news articles. And folks, not just any news articles. When I looked at it and I corroborated the dates and the headlines, there's CNN news articles that are repeating the same information in the dossier, but that we now know came from Clapper, right, and Brennan, and possibly even Comey, leaking the dossier info out to their various news sources. To wit, on page 21, I quote, a July 2016 article in an identified news organization reported that candidate one, that would be the Trumpster, that candidate one's campaign worked behind the scenes to make sure political party one's platform would not call for giving weapons to the Ukraine. The article further stated that candidate one's campaign sought to make sure that they would not pledge to give Ukraine the weapons it has been asking for from the United States. This would be a pleasing move to Putin. This was all stuff that was, besides the golden showers nonsense, was all in the Steele dossier. This is, money laundering. This is information laundering. You're supposed to get corroboration before you spy on someone who is inside a political campaign of your political opponent. Now, how do I know that this is all hitting the fan right now? Well, I know it because Comey, Brennan, and Clapper are all pointing the fingers at each other. And this all broke out into all but open warfare this week between them. No honor among thieves. Brennan is saying, and Clapper are saying, that it was Comey that wanted to put the report, the Steele dossier, into the FISA warrant and into the intelligence analysis that backed it up. And they are saying that they opposed it, that they had enough to go on without it. Comey is, of course, saying the exact opposite. He's saying, no. I had my reservations, and it was Brennan and Clapper that insisted that this was all good material. You have to understand. Well, weren't we being told that these were all the serious adults in the room? Weren't we being told not that long ago that Jim Comey, former FBI director, was a Boy Scout, was a model of American law enforcement, Mr. Squeaky Clean? All of this is unraveling before our eyes. And part of the evidence of it unraveling, I do this right when we come back. I want to play a recent clip. What was it on Anderson Cooper? Comey is just starting to sound weird. He's starting to sound like a cornered animal. I'll play it for you in a second. Don't go anywhere. This is too good to. Oh, this is just too good. I said I was tingling. I am. I guarantee it, because I'm telling you right now, this is the beginning of the end, and this story is only going to get worse for them. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Jurjovsky, Sam Nation, Robbie, producer Robbie, excuse me, that was improper of me. Producer Robbie asked me if it was a kind of a spidey sensed tingle or a what? Oh, a Chris Matthews tingle. No, definitely a Chris Matthews tingle. It just came right up my leg and kind of hung out there for a minute. So I'll let your imagination run wild with that. Here is a wonderful, wonderful clip of Boy Scout James Comey beginning to lose his marbles. Now, this is on. He had that town hall last Thursday. Anderson Cooper moderated it. And Comey basically got a bunch of free airtime from CNN, who are desperate, right? CNN is desperate to rehab their guy. And CNN's dipped into all of this very deeply because they're the ones that got info leaked. I think it was actually Clapper. The more I hear from different folks, I think Clapper was the guy that was leaking all this stuff to CNN. CNN was printing it, and then Clapper was putting it back into their analysis of why Trump was dangerous and had to be stopped, that he was getting infiltrated by the Russians. They're citing news articles. And can we just pause for a second? Even assume that they are not information laundering, right? That they're not just recycling the same info, planning the source, and then using the article that results as corroborative proof. Who uses a news story in a warrant application? I'm a lawyer. I can see it now. The FISA court, right? FISA court's determining whether we spy on a campaign. Highest of high standards, burdens of proof here, right? Well, not proof, but standards of review, right? So that now, if I'm, can you imagine? I go to a judge in LA. I'm a district attorney, or I'm a police officer. I'm investigating some guy, and I say, well, I know two things. I know that a confidential informant, a CI, is telling me that this guy is doing drugs. And also, the Los Angeles Times has put an article, and by here I've got it. Here's the article, Your Honor. The LA Times has written a story that this guy is doing drugs or dealing drugs. I mean, it's a freaking joke. And it was sloppy from top to bottom. It was sloppy because they still thought they would win. And when Trump won, that is when the crap hit the fan. And it began flying. And that is where they became desperate to eliminate him. And everything that has followed since then is the result of that frantic cover-up. It's always a cover-up, right? Not the crime. It's the cover-up itself that's much worse. So anyway, At this town hall meeting on CNN, Comey's up there, and Anderson Cooper asks him, "Hey, you know, you wrote this op-ed in the New York Times last week, and it was all about how Trump co-opts great men like Big Barr, right? The Attorney General, and in it you said, quote." Accomplished people lacking inner strength, can't resist the compromises necessary to survive Mr. Trump, because Mr. Trump eats your soul in small bites. That was in the op-ed. Anderson Cooper then goes, I mean, can you please tell me, explain how you believe the president of the United States is eating people's souls and how that process takes place? Listen to this.
This president, because he is an amoral leader, shapes those around him. And that shaping sometimes pushes out someone who is a strong person of integrity, who stands up and says, not going to have it. But far more often, it shapes and bends and pulls in weaker souls. And he does it. I've seen him. It's happened to me. And pretty soon, you're wrapped so tightly in this web that there's no way out for you.
You know, I think what James Comey felt in those meetings from Trump was a first time that there was somebody sitting in that chair that wasn't going to take his BS. I think he was having some very tough questions asked of him, and he realized that he was on thin frickin' ice. That ice was breaking underneath him. Everything here, this is, I promise you, these are the words of a person deflecting from themselves. And I'll tell you, I'll make this very important point. If you doubt what I'm saying, Comey's a lawyer, and say what you will of him, he's not an idiot. Lawyers, when they are armed with fact, with truth, they use that fact to make arguments. You know, a lawyer, and I'm not talking about hack lawyers like Cohen or whoever, but you know, but a real educated guy, thinking, sentient being, when they've got facts, they use them. When you start talking about feelings and about morality, and you start making these sort of open, you know, condemnations of character and things like that, it is evidence you're grasping at straws. Trust me on this. Comey is sinking, and he knows it. Sam Rojofsky, back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rojofsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rojofsky making radio great again. Folks, this is what I was talking about earlier when I said that the Steele dossier isn't all about the peeing prostitutes. On page 22 of the 400-odd page FISA warrant application to surveil one Carter Page, you can read this at the bottom of the page. The September 23rd news article, again, they're citing a frickin' news article, stated that a, quote, well-placed Western intelligence source told the news organization that Page met with Igor Session, a longtime Putin associate. So this all, right, so, okay, right, so what they're saying, the well-placed Western intelligence source is Christopher Steele. Well-placed, I guess he's well-placed in the Hillary Clinton campaign. I mean, he's well-placed there. He certainly wasn't in the frickin' hotel room because he... I don't know, but nonetheless... You see what's going on? That same well-placed Western intelligence source that is talking to the news is also the one that's filling out a dossier. And these the same connections, the same Putin, Trump, Russia, all of this, the same dots are, or so-called connections are being made. It's garbage. According to this, at their alleged meeting, Session raised the issue of lifting sanctions with Page. According to the September 23rd news article, the Western intelligence source also reported that U.S. intelligence agencies received reports that Page met with another Putin aide, some guy named Igor. No, that's my, I didn't want to pronounce the last name. I might butcher it. But at any rate, it's page after page. It's over and over and over. They are citing news articles in this application. And at no point do they anywhere mention that this guy was paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. Now, there is one footnote that some people describe as a page long. It's not really a page long, but it is a long footnote where it says something about a political campaign. But it doesn't say Hillary Clinton. It doesn't make any mention. It's and by the way, it's buried in a 420-page application. I think that's relevant because I've got to be careful about how I phrase this. No, no, most judges are very hardworking. Most judges read every page that is submitted to them personally. However, and if you're an attorney, you know what I'm talking about. However, some do not. And you know what? This 420-page application, yeah, it was to surveil Carter. Yeah, but what if the judge is a Democrat, doesn't like Trump, Washington insider? They're glossing over this. It's got Jim Comey's signature on it. For Pete's sake, it's not like it's put out by some junior guy. Guaranteed. I guarantee it. The judge didn't read every word. So some footnote that's on page 80 of 400. Yeah, I... No, it was skimmed. This thing was skimmed. And by the way, if you're having to fill pages and pages of citing news articles, it also tells me that you're puffing this thing up with a lot of useless crap and you're making it long for the very purposes of hiding stuff in it. Haven't we all done this at work? Well, you know, if there's a bad memo, we got, you know, I always know if I get a memo from somebody, if it's short and sweet, I know what I'm dealing with. If it's long, I'm just waiting to find the turd that is hidden somewhere in it. But that's assuming that the eyes reviewing the application were critical. And I submit to you folks that that they were not. So, this, expect us to unravel. There's a couple of areas of heat right now. Heat-seeking missiles, if you will, that are inbound on all of this. So, U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr... appointed a guy, a U.S. Attorney, John Durham. This guy is known on both sides of the aisles as absolutely apolitical. He's made no campaign contributions in his lifetime. He served under six presidents. And this guy is apparently just has a reputation of being very thorough. And he has been tasked. He's not a special counsel, but he's basically been tasked to lead an investigation of how this spying on Trump campaign began. And at the same time, Horowitz, who's the inspector general of the FBI, Justice Department, is conducting his own research. And I just read this morning that apparently his report is in final stages and is just basically being edited at this point and reviewed. So that, I think, will be dropping within the next couple weeks. This is going to be bad news bears for all these guys. And finally, I think some justice in all of this. Also, it will not be good politically. Let me get into the campaigns a little bit, what's going on, give you an update. Yes, there are even more Democrats running now. So let's talk about that. Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Yeah, so everybody's talking about this. The polling, Biden's numbers, they're through the roof. 39.1% is the real Clear Politics average. For the last week or 2 weeks, Sanders trailing at 16%. Warren, Pocahontas, she's at 16.4, and then it kind of drops off from there. Buttigieg has a decently strong showing at 6.7%, but that's really what we're talking about here. Everybody is. After Biden is trailing off. So what do you make of this? Does this mean that Biden is the candidate? Is he the guy? And the answer is no. It just means he's the guy now. For all of you wondering when the actual election is, well, okay, so the main election, right, the general election is going to be in November of 2020, which is, you know, a year and a half away. the primary season really is doesn't kick off until the summer right now. And then we'll go for a year, right? I mean, you're talking about the convention, the Democratic convention will happen in 2020, usually somewhere in the summer of 2020. So that's a year away. I mean, Biden could forget his own name by then. You heard that, right? He said he'd had a conversation with Maggie Thatcher about Trump and his lack of fitness for office. I think he meant Theresa May, who's the current prime minister of Great Britain. By the way, a total totally idiotic. Can you imagine confusing Maggie Thatcher, the great Margaret Thatcher, with that limp noodle Theresa May? Yeah, Thatcher's what? Oh, no, yeah, well, of course, I think we have, Robbie, we have a smart audience. I don't have to tell people that Margaret Thatcher has long passed away. So Biden's either having seances or he had a brain fart. That was also the same week that his wife went on national television to tell people that she didn't have the courage to speak up to her husband when he touched her inappropriately. No, on CNN's Dana Bash program, former second lady Dr. Jill Biden told her that she did not have the courage 20 years ago to confront her husband about inappropriately touching her and she said this during an interview that Tuesday. Yeah, he comes from a very affectionate family, Jill said. Recently, I mean, times have changed and Joe has heard that, you know, but to back off and give people their space. Oh, my God. He got me too'd by his own wife. And he's got 39% of the vote. You know what I take from these polling numbers? I take that the Democrats are absolutely screwed. That if Joe Biden is leading the pack, even though he is, and he, what is he? Is he older than Trump or younger? He's younger than Trump, right? He's younger than Trump. I think he's younger than Trump, and he looks older than Trump. I mean, Trump just he. You saw him at that rally at the Panhandle, Florida Panhandle. He goes up there. He has this great rally energy. Just throws himself on. It's unbelievable. Yes, Biden's 76. Trump is 72. Okay, 4 years. 4 years older than Trump. Well, at any rate. He looks 10 years older, and it matters. Perception matters. This is why crazy Bernie isn't going to make it, not just because of the politics, but I think Bernie has lost a little bounce in a step. Buttigieg, you heard this, the boy wonder. Trump has finally come up with a nickname for him. Alfred E. Newman. So what is this from the Mad cartoon? And he was the freckled kid with the gap in his front teeth, big ears. It's good. I mean, it's good. But I thought that Buttigieg's response to being questioned about the moniker was pretty good, too. Listen to this.
So I'll be honest, I had to Google that. I guess it's a generational thing. I didn't get the reference. It's kind of funny, I guess, but he's also the president of the United States. And I'm surprised he's not spending more time trying to salvage this China deal.
Yeah, he's good on his feet. He really is. Problem is, he's just too young. He is too young, and he's just and this is gonna stick. The brilliance of these Trump monikers, these nicknames, are that they stick. And now all we can think about, by the way, a lot of people don't know who Alfred E. Newman is. But once Trump puts it on Twitter, we all do. Right. So all of a sudden, what do all the news stories have? Right. They've got side by side pictures of this Alfred character next to Buttigieg. And Trump successfully has ingrained in all of our minds that Buttigieg is a cartoon character. Yeah. Look, someday somebody's going to write a book about how brilliant Trump is. Right now, we're not ready for it. We're not ready to accept it. But I'm telling you, it's genius. All right, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
And now, Ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Marjowski, okay. One thing I will add to Biden is that the Kamala Harris camp is extremely pissed off about all these news stories circulating about a potential Biden-Harris ticket. So Harris is, according to the polling here that I have, the averages of all the polls taken, one, two, three, she's fourth. So she's a contender. And this early in the game, especially from somebody who has decent fundraising numbers, being a contender, you don't want to be relegated into the number two spot. This is, I suspect that these stories are coming from Biden's camp. And I'll explain. I think Biden identifies Harris as a true contender and a competitor, somebody who could capture in the, as this thing heats up, the imagination of the party. And by putting her in that number two slot, you plant a seed with the voting public. Yeah, that sounds good. You know, you got the senior statesman out front. He's got the age experience. He's been in the Obama administration. And then we've got the younger, right, gal who, is attorney general, and she's a woman of color and, you know, ticks all the boxes. So now we've got a dream team. And the Democrats, they care about the look. They don't care about substance. They don't care about the look. And I think also Biden's pretty excited to put his hands on her. I think that's a big part of all of this. He's so, yeah, I want Kamala up there on stage. He's already picturing the victory speech as he's holding her hand up high. You know, I absolutely is thinking about it. Yeah, and Jill is talking to notable attorneys about her claims. Maybe, I don't know. But at any rate, that's one of the things going on. There's another couple of entries this past week into the race. One from Steve Bullock. You know who Steve Bullock is? No? Well, good. Neither did I. And this is my job to follow these things. So Bullock is Montana's governor. And on Tuesday, he held a press conference. And in it, a reporter asked what I think is a fairly straightforward question. Hey, governor, can you name some accomplishments that you've had as governor here in the state of Montana?
I am happy that hopefully my kids still know my most important job is being their dad. I think the things where, you know, as governor, it's not like attorney general when you know you won or lost a case. Sometimes you won't have impacts for years.
It goes on and on and on. I'm saving you right now. Trust me. Executive decision. I mean, it's like a 3-minute awful. I can't think of anything. He just stumbles through it. So that's another also ran. But I think the biggest funny news of the week is that Bill de Blasio, New York's absolutely worthless, idiotic mayor, has entered the race. New Yorkers are like 2/3 of them are totally against it. He's termed out in New York, right? So he's kind of thinking, what's my next deal here? And I think he gets to be important for a while. He gets to fundraise. He gets to travel. He gets to sleep in. This guy's notorious, de Blasio is, for never showing up anywhere on time. And I don't know. He's not. No, they haven't done any polling on him yet. But I think he's going to need help from that SAT, the adversity score. Did you hear about this? The SAT is now going to issue an adversity score. So you're not just going to get a score, but you're also going to get a score of how poor and broke your parents are. That helps, I guess, colleges figure out, put some context. It's like a golf handicap. Exactly. Well, they'll have to do that for Biden's polling, I think. And rehabilitate him, you know. Hey, you know, give him some point. He's an absolutely worthless politician. He's coming at this from a disadvantage. Oh my gosh! All right, we come back. I will get to trade, but first, I'm watching a new TV show, and it has my interest, but for all the wrong reasons. And I'm gonna explain to you my fascination with it when we get back. It's an HBO show. Not Game of Thrones. No. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years... men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, not to completely just gloss over that SAT development. I think we're all familiar with this, those of us who had to go through college admissions in recent history, did an SAT exam. Also, there is an ACT exam that tends to be more accepted by schools on the East Coast. At any rate, the SAT, ACT, and other standardized tests are now in the news because of the widespread allegations that wealthy parents bribed proctors and other admissions officials into giving their children preferential treatment. And as it relates to the SAT, apparently there were certain proctors that were bribed to change answers for the kids of these parents. So I guess little Susie Q is sitting there and she's filling out her answer. And then afterwards, the proctor will look at it and go, oh, it's not C, it's D, and just erased and changed the change the bubble. So now, I guess one of the things that is being done, I mean, I would think securing the testing centers and, I don't know, having more than one person in the room with somebody, you know, it's harder to keep a secret among two than it is among one. I don't know. But anyway, so the solution is to come up with this adversity score. And so various demographic details about an applicant are amassed and put together, and there's going to be a number. So if you are, let's say, a Sam Nation Jr., like Daniel, my son Daniel, probably he will have a very bad number on the adversity score. Because, you know, parents are educated, we live in a nice area, we're white, and I think all of that's going to come in, and there's going to be a little number, and it's going to help, right? This is what we're being told. It's being used to help admissions officers contextualize the other results. And it's not just for the SAT score. I guess it'll help contextualize GPA. Yay! This is a great idea. And I think one of the reasons that it bothers me so much is that it used to be when somebody was poor, struggling, the child of a single parent, had to work in high school to make ends meet, and they went to Harvard without affirmative action, without an adversity score to help contextualize their excellent marks, they were and are somebody in society that we celebrate, that we admire, that we place on a pedestal. The left over and over, and by the way, this is absolutely a product of leftist thinking. The left wants to take success away from individuals and give responsibility for that success or credit for that success to the collective, to society. We as society are going to do a great thing. It's called affirmative action. We heard that, right? We heard that 30, 40 years ago. Now, we as a society, we as the SAT, we as the sentient beings here, the smartest men and women and trans people in a room, we are going to come together and we are going to help produce the score that is going to guide us in our efforts to help persons who are struggling. Now, if there's any strategy to taking away the greatness of this country, it is to remove obstacles of struggle and obstacles, whether they're socioeconomic or other, remove obstacles from those that would excel through them and become the exceptional leaders of tomorrow. The people that, I tell you, the rise and fall of American families, when you look in history, you look at families, they amass big fortunes, and then eventually they just kind of crumble. You know, they come apart because the third generation, the wheels fall off of it. I've talked about this recently, talked about the Murdochs. They get soft because guess what? All the privilege in the world eventually produces losers. And what you have in a meritocracy, and I know I get criticized for this when I talk about this, and people say, it's not a meritocracy. Look at the privilege. Look at the wealth. And I say to people, you look at it through such a short lens. You look at on a timeline, you look at just what occurs in your instant, in your world. But when you look at these families and you look at two or three generations, privilege is a curse. I mean, Kennedys, anyone? Knock, knock. It's a curse. And in our meritocracy, excellence, it's a renewal. You know? The families that fall, there's people to take up and that rise up that are self-created and have blown through barriers, punched through walls, have climbed out of holes in despair that you and I, you know, most of us can't even imagine. And they become the great, you know, success stories of the ensuing decades. It is, I know the left is into recycling, but it's recycling. This is, you know, it is. Money's lost, money's gained. But it has to come from the individual. And when the state tampers with this is like, I actually have a greater point here. And I will try to get to it throughout this hour. It's a bit nuanced. But the left likes to talk about science, likes to cloak themselves in analytical thinking, or claim that they are analytical thinkers. And we saw it this week when Bill Nye, the science guy, lit a globe on fire, which was, I guess, oddly meant to be ironic and a representation of what it is that we're doing with global warming. So, yes, he lit a globe on fire and then put out the fire, and he just says the planet's burning and we're ignoring scientific data. And it's funny because at the same time, we're perfectly willing to tamper with evolutionary trends, laws, right? Encouraging competition. We want not the smartest and brightest, but we want the people that get help by the government. It's an interesting thought. And it leads me to this show that I discovered on Monday by accident. I was at home. And my wife, Sherry, was, as it turns out, of all places, Washington, D.C., getting ready to have lunch with Melania. This is a true story. I'll talk maybe a little bit about that if we have time this hour. But at any rate, I was home alone, which meant that I could watch anything I wanted on TV. And this is a great thing. So I had my remote and I went to HBO. And there is, I've noticed this documentary on Chernobyl, or it's a docuseries. It's a dramatized show about the Chernobyl disaster. Now, if you remember what this was back in April of 1986, the Chernobyl power plant blew up. Reactor number 4 went, and it blew up because, of course, the top-down Soviet state couldn't handle any dissent, didn't listen to anything, didn't care. There was a, this was in the 80s, wheels were already coming off the Soviet Union. And again, there's a long story, but the first two episodes of the show, which is all that has been released so far, so I've watched both of them, are quite good. But they're good for, they're good because I tell you, the left, I know what the show intends to do. I know, don't talk to me. I know. The show intends to be about how politicians ignore scientists. The show is about, and trust me, if you've seen it, you've got to understand liberals. Because the show is meant to be about, yes, about politicians who willfully ignore the science to the detriment of global well-being. In short, it is a show about global warming. Now, the left never misses an opportunity for accidental self-parody. And let me tell you what I mean by this. So the guy that wrote this, the guy who's the producer and writer of the program, is a guy by the name of Craig Mazin. Do you know who this is? He's a guy who I guess is most famous for being Ted Cruz's freshman roommate at Princeton. Every month or so, Craig Mazin tweets about how he walked in on Ted Cruz pleasuring himself in the dorm room. That's Mazin's claim to fame. Mazin also is a foaming at the mouth, rabid lib. He does not like Trump. He does not get, no. But inadvertently, unbeknownst to him, he's made this documentary that captures exactly what happens when you submit to liberalism, when you submit to socialism, and you give everything up to an all-powerful state. Now, in the case of Chernobyl, where there is no private enterprise, there is no accountability, there is no tort law, there is no... there is no competition. There is just a top-down structure. It produces such a mediocre result that it poisons half the planet. But don't worry, Bernie Sanders wants Medicare for all, which is basically turning over our health care to the same super state, which we presume would handle with great care and efficiency and industry such important matters as our own life and death. But it also, this show also produced, totally inadvertently, an opportunity let me pause here for a minute. We're going to take a break. This show ends up, who's the number one champion right now of global warming? Who on Capitol Hill of all the politicians? AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she's the one with the Green New Deal, and all the leftists are having, getting stiffies over how exciting all of this is, how much promise. Finally, somebody brave enough, right? Brave enough. And by the way, are criticizing other party grandees on the left, Democrats, for not supporting her. And willfully, I guess, ostriching, putting their heads in the sand and ignoring this global calamity. And again, I'm telling you, this is all coming in the same week. So you got to understand this is why it's so ripe for criticism, because Bill Nye, the science guy, lights the globe on fire on HBO. And then this show comes out, and then AOC's in the news, and I'm going to explain to you how this all converges. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. One thing I've got to tell you, and just remind you if you are a new listener to this program, that my parents escaped from communist Czechoslovakia in 1968. And I am well-versed in Bolshevik hijinks. And I also understand the language, right? The language of socialism. I am fluent in it because I am a student of history. Now, why I bring this up is that in socialist countries, satellite republics of the Soviet Union and the Soviet Union itself, your value of, well, I'll say this, your value, your also your social standing was based not on your qualifications, but rather on your political purity. And if you know anything about communism, socialism, you've read some books, you know, written by notable thinkers like Lenin and others. You know that the workers of the world should run the world, and industrialists, rich people, hoarders of wealth are bad and must be replaced from positions of power. This is how it all works, right? So, in other words, one of the first things that the Bolsheviks did in the Czech Republic, what was then Czechoslovakia, in the 50s, is they went and replaced all the judges that were, you know, educated, college-educated lawyers with people that went, had, like, they were workers, they were had worked in various factories, and basically very quickly gave them a four-week, five-week crash course on the law, and then they sent them out to preside over life and death trials. And those were the procurators, the judges that presided over the trials that put in the 50s a number of prominent Czechs to death. Well, there is a great part in the movie, in the miniseries, the Chernobyl miniseries on HBO, between Ulana Komyuk, who is a scientist, and she realizes she's some like 25 miles away at a research institute. When the disaster happens, she wakes up at her desk. It's a Saturday morning, and she is struck that there's some reading. There's some abnormal reading on her meter that traces radiation, right? And so she takes a sample off the window because there's a black dust that's blowing in, takes a sample, runs a few tests and figures out that there's a problem, traces the type of uranium, the type of stuff that's out there, goes, it has to be coming from a nuclear power plant. And she goes to the local boss at the local party headquarters in her town and says, we got to evacuate people and give everybody, you know, iodine tablets, because everybody's going to, you know, get sick. And I just take a minute here and listen, well, 30 seconds, and listen to what, how this exchange goes down.
I know about Chernobyl.
Oh?
I know that the core is either partially or completely exposed.
Whatever that means.
And that if you don't immediately issue iodine tablets and then evacuate the city, hundreds of thousands of people are going to get cancer, and God knows how many more will die.
Yes, very good. There has been an accident at Chernobyl, but I've been assured there is no problem.
I'm telling you that there is.
I prefer my opinion to yours.
I'm a nuclear physicist. Before you were deputy secretary, you worked in a shoe factory.
Yes, I worked in a shoe factory. And now I'm in charge to the workers of the world.
I am telling you that you cannot make this up. Hold your horses. February 22nd, what is this, 3 months before this episode aired, here is AOC talking about her job to a Girls Who Code event. This is February 22nd, so 3 months before this episode aired. And listen to this.
She's just a waitress. Like, why on earth would we endorse her? And it was like, it's your worst fear. It's especially when you feel like imposter syndrome, feeling like someone was going to find you out as like a fraud. And I read it and I was like, you know what? I don't care anymore because I'm at least trying and they're not. Like, I just introduced Green New Deal 2 weeks ago. So people are like, oh, it's unrealistic. Oh, it's vague. Oh, it doesn't address this little minute thing. And I'm like, you try. You do it.
Right.
Because you're not. So until you do it, I'm the boss.
How about that?
I'm the boss. That's right. So never mind that my Green New Deal is so idiotic that it would literally destroy this country. The way that the Bolsheviks' stubborn refusal to act in the days, hours and days after the explosion in Chernobyl put at risk and killed thousands of people. The same way that she puts forward these stupid things and is on a finance committee, for Pete's sake, you know, forging economic policy that will shape how we do banking in this country. And her qualification for it is, well, you know, I'm the boss. I have more on this when we come back. Sam Rogowski on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. I know it's not just a humorous I'm the boss clip. You know, I think it's interesting that a liberal Hollywood writer writes a show for a liberal network like HBO, intending to make an environmental morality play, right? Is what it is. We'll see how it all plays out. But so far, they end up shooting themselves in the foot. Because one, they show us what it's like when the state controls everything. And you see the resignation, right, of these people. They don't care. The guys that are running the reactor, they just are, they're over it. And they're top down. They're worried about not. They're not worried about their accountability to, I don't know, the public or some higher. They're worried about their political report card, how they're going to get reported to their local party bosses. And the party bosses make life and death decisions. None of these decisions, by the way, are made by the people. The people can't even leave their town. They see an explosion's happening and they can't even leave if they wanted to. Their first thing they are is locked in. And it ought to give all of us a little insight into what a mini socialism within our great capitalist system would look like. If we had single payer healthcare, where the state is in a position to determine what healthcare you get because he who has the gold makes the rules, right? And you need a procedure. You want a procedure. You need something desperately. You are at the mercy of the state to get it. Now, I recently had to get, you know, the new ID. I had to replace my driver's license here in California. And I went to my local DMV, which, by the way, is not that busy of a DMV, right? It's kind of a little secret place. I'm not going to tell you which one it is because I don't want you to know my secret. But anyway, I've always been very successful there at getting in right away. And my appointment was like the closest one I could get was 2 months out. 2 months out to get something that the state of California is saying that I need. Well, it's the U.S., right? It's the new driver's license requirements. But nonetheless, the state is telling me, the federal government's telling California, your IDs need to comply with X criteria. And the state of California says, all right, you need to have X criteria before such and such a date. Otherwise, you can't use this when you fly anywhere, right? So now think about that. And the DMV example, I think, is a really good one because we all can relate to it. We've all had to sit there and smile at these stupid, lazy idiots. And imagine that those people are now, imagine you are rushing into a hospital with a loved one, having a stroke, having a seizure, needing a procedure, and the DMV guy is the guy making decisions. Watch Chernobyl. Any one of those party guys, they're in charge of your medical decisions. You know, this Medicare for All thing, I understand that a lot of people find it seductive. It's tempting. It's nice. It's, it's compassionate. But work it out. The inefficiency that is in the bureaucracy currently of private health care through insurance exists without a doubt. It's not a perfect system, but it would be 10 times worse, 10 times worse. The same clowns that think that we need Medicare for all. Did you hear Bernie Sanders talking about how, well, it wasn't that long ago that people banked at the post office. A post office works. We used to bank at the post office. Hey, man, I pay my bills for my smartphone now. You know, as I'm waiting at a traffic stop somewhere, I'm waiting for my daughter and I can pay my bills for my phone. Post office. If it were up to the post office, we wouldn't have online bill pay. If it weren't for private banks trying to figure out how to maximize efficiency and profit, we wouldn't have half the things that we love about banking. If it weren't for FedEx and DHL, we would never have the post office trying to deliver packages on time and offering services such as priority mail and the like. There's no way. This is, you've got to think about it. Don't just accept what other people tell you and don't just go based off of feelings. Well, it does tie into, I wasn't going to get into it, but it ties to this whole, I'll finish with the science part of it. So we're being told, right, that the planet is blowing up. We're being told that it's so hot that in 10 years, 12 years, we're done, we're toast, we're going to be on fire. But these are the same scientists that are trying to tell us that a fetus in a womb is not a living thing. Don't we have science that has established that? Now, I'm going to tell you what's going on in Alabama. I'm not ready to wrap my head around it. I really am not. I'm being candid with you. I've always tried to do that as the host here. I'll give you my honest knee-jerk reaction is that it just goes too far, and I don't like it. I just don't like it. But I will tell you that the hysteria on the left and the idea that abortion ought to be some sort of backup birth control is not okay with me, morally. And the science backs it up. And so we got to pick, are we going with science or not? And the problem with global warming is we don't necessarily understand and have the scientific evidence to show us that it's man-made. We do know historically that Earth's temperatures have gone up and have gone down and have gone back up again and have gone down dramatically. So I'm all about scientific reasoning, but I think it needs to be applied across the board. And I'm really enjoying how this show that's supposed to alert us about global warming inadvertently sinks socialism and so much of what is being pushed by the left right now, especially heading into 2020. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski. All right, let's switch to a lighter topic. Trade. I've been bemused the last 2 weeks by the way that the trade war is being described on both sides. And I want to just quickly explain this to you because you've got to understand how tariffs work in order to understand exactly what's going on here. So a tariff is a tax that is paid by the importer. So supposing that you want to bring something into this country in bulk, usually, right? Because if you're just bringing something in for yourself, generally that's exempt. It's a personal use thing and usually don't have to pay a duty. Although more expensive things you do. So if you try to import furniture or art or anything like that, you're going to have to pay an import duty. So the deal we had with China is that China would send us stuff and we paid zero or very little duty on that stuff that was coming in. But then at the same time, any stuff that we were sending to China was at times getting tariffed by the Chinese at a higher rate. And that is what we call not free trade. It might be free trade, right? But it's not fair trade, right? To me at least, if you're going to freely trade with a country, the trade goes both ways. And I know this from personal experience. Man, if you go to Korea, I haven't been to China, but go to Korea and you see nothing but Hyundai, right? Hyundai. And then you see a Mercedes, you know, and it's the kind of Mercedes that we in Newport Beach here have like, I don't know, a million of. It ain't no thing, but over there, it's a big thing. And you ask the locals, well, how much is that car? And a car that we buy for 80, 90K here is like 350,000 there. And I go, well, what the hell? How come? Because it's dutied at a far higher rate. Mercedes is from Germany, but I'm talking about also the Mercedes that come from Alabama, right? Because we make them in this country. Cadillac, same thing. Jeeps, Chrysler products, very rare, very luxurious. And yet we're getting Hyundais. I mean, they're making some of them in the country, but we're getting Hyundai parts and everything, but, you know, just sent over, you know, in most cases, tariff-free. It's not fair. So here, to correct the record, right, the tariff is not paid, as Trump is asserting, by China. But in effect, in the long run, it is. And I need to explain this to you because the demagoguery on the left is that Trump just raised taxes on ordinary Americans 25%. And that were true if we could only get goods from China and there was no other way we could get a product in our pockets at all. Because then we would be left to only getting goods from China, right? And so, yes, it would be a 25% or whatever the percentage is, consumption tax on everything that we buy. But it's interesting. There's there's goods coming from other countries and made in other places. And in fact, when you look at wages across Asia and the Pacific, China has some of the higher wages now that factor into higher prices of goods, right? Because that's one of the biggest costs usually. Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines, Thailand, all producers of goods. Now, India coming online, too. They all have much lower wages. In fact, I'll tell you, in the case of China has like over three times the higher wages than Vietnam. And so what happens if you are Walmart and you're importing a ton of Chinese crap every day? You have to make a choice. Am I going to take this good? Is this good going to suddenly cost 25% more? Answer, yeah, it is. So, what do I do as Walmart? I scramble and quickly go to find other producers who will make the same crappy BS toy, plastic piece of crap, from another country that isn't getting punished, who will ultimately, quote unquote, pay for that? China. And they will pay for it by losing deals. So companies that produce cheap toys, scooters, things like that for Walmart, will either they're going to have to either move their operations to another country that isn't affected by the tariff, or they're going to lose the contract to a different company that's going to build, already has factories existing in Vietnam and other places. Goods will rise, but the reason that Wall Street has largely shrugged this off, right, first 3 days, bit of a bloodbath, stocks have since rebounded, is because in the long run, this is a problem for China. We hold all the cards, and all of these ninnies out there who are just hand-wringing that this is the end, and then we're just, I mean, that tariffs are not the way to go and blah, blah. Yes, of course, I agree. Tariffs are not a sound trade policy, but they are absolutely an excellent tactic at regaining the upper hand in a negotiation. And China is going to have to blink here. Otherwise, their economy is going to sink and sink fast. And their economy is built on quicksand. It is state-run, state-organized. It's a bubble like the world has never seen before. We look at China as this formidable, powerful, dynamic economy. But it's all controlled by the state bank and by the Communist Party. And it's a paper tiger. And everyone that I know that lives in this world and that has got a little bit of intelligence and capability says variations of the same thing. So we have a choice in goods. As long as we as customers have a choice in goods, we can get around there. And by the way, many of us, I can't get around it with my iPhone. I love Apple, so tough, luck. Apple has factories in China, and so a lot of the stuff is made in China. But for years, my family and I deliberately look at where goods are from, and we do not buy Chinese crap. Now, we have to pay a little bit more money for it. We are in a position where we can do that. But, we've already been self-selecting ourselves out of that market to the greatest extent possible. And now more people will do that. More companies will do that. The importers will have to do it. The companies that depend on these goods will have to do it. And in the long run, it'll affect China. So this is a long way of telling you. My opinion is this is absolutely the right way to deal with it. And the Chinese have been getting away with murder because no American president, no American administration to date has had the cojones to do this to them and to go toe-to-toe. And this is what we elected Trump to do, and he's doing it. So everyone just take a chill pill, let it play out. We're going to be fine. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, coming to the rare defense of a California Democrat. News yesterday from Fresno, California. Do you know where Fresno is? We've got a lot of international listeners, people from all over the country. You may not be familiar with Fresno. If you are from Fresno, I'm very sorry to tell you, but it's really a horrible place. It smells bad. And I don't know what else can I tell you about Fresno. I dated a girl from Fresno once, and I don't remember. Oh, she smelled good. But it just, anyway, this is a personal preference, so I am sorry. But anyway, there is a California assemblyman. He's a Democrat from Fresno. His name is Joaquin Arambula. And Mr. Arambula was charged some time ago with child abuse. Now, here's what happened. Apparently, he disciplined his child by smacking her. I believe it was a female girl. 7-year-old daughter, yes. Smacked her. She went to school. They noticed a bruise, which I guess wasn't even related to it. And it, but if you have little kids, I'm going to tell you right now. Your kids, if they are not confined in a wheelchair, they have bruises all the time. My little Ava was just learning, teaching herself, in fact, to ride a bike. And her legs look like, I don't know, like she was sentenced by some Sharia court. I mean, poor girl, every time no training wheels. So I'm telling kids, rough and tumble, bruises happen. So I guess somewhere in school, she says something about my dad smacked me or whatever, or hit me. And it got reported to CPS. And almost unbelievably, the district attorney here in Fresno prosecuted the case, went all the way to trial yesterday. Mr. Arambula was acquitted of all charges. Now, this is a great day. By the way, this is an example. I want to tell you, juries, you know, thank goodness we have juries. I know juries get a lot of bad publicity because they make occasionally some boneheaded decisions. But this is an example of where everyone in the state got it wrong. So in the trial, I guess they had a number of witnesses come forward that, no, these parents are model parents, but they do discipline their kids. They do occasionally spank their children. And they didn't deny that, which, by the way, is not against the law in California. It's not. There's no provision in the penal code for punishing a parent for corporal punishment of a child. But you can't abuse a kid, and there's ways to differentiate that. So at any rate, here is an example of where the state just went bananas. CPS went bananas, the district attorney, the police, everybody. They took it too far. And a jury came in and said, no, this is not abuse, and acquitted this gentleman. So the family is reunited and very relieved. I'm going to tell you, this boils my blood. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I had a third grade teacher. Her name was Mrs. Madison. I don't know if my parents have ever heard me tell the story. I think I've alluded to it here on the program, but I'm naming names now. And Mrs. Madison, you are a hero, because I, in the third grade, was an idiot. Of course, I was an idiot all the way up until I was maybe 25. So third grade Sam, dummy. And, you know, my parents from time to time would smack me. And it was a good thing, too, because if they hadn't, gosh knows what would have happened to me. So I told Mrs. Madison, I said, you know, she was kind of checking in with me. I'd had some bad grades. And I said, well, you can't just send a report home to my parents because, you know, they'll spank me. And Mrs. Madison kind of pulled me aside and said, you know, we got to talk about this. And she asked me a few questions, which didn't really make sense to me then, but made sense to me later as I grew up. And she thankfully, mercifully, had enough common sense to realize that there was nothing abusive going on in my home. But if she'd been some deranged leftist of 2019, God knows what would have happened to my parents. We've gone mad. So you owe your kid one thing and one thing only in life, and that is to guide them and discipline them as necessary. And I'm old fashioned European, and I think that occasionally a SWAT is just what a kid needs. And and I'm terrified of a future where we outlaw it. And there's a big push. It's happening even in places in Europe. And I don't like it. All right. What a show. It's flew by that fast. All right. I promise we'll be back next week. We're going to get back on schedule. And do follow us on Twitter, because that's where we send out info about what we're doing and not doing. All right. Have a wonderful weekend. Love you all. Thank you for being here. You guys are wonderful.